You're listening to Bondi Tunes, international broadcasting around the world, and we welcome our listeners on FM in Australia and New Zealand. I'm Henry in Sydney, and now it's time for this.
Bondi Tunes International, a conversation about nothing.
And I have Rachel in Melbourne here in Australia, and Adam Devlin is in Brisbane in Queensland. Welcome to the show, guys.
Well, thanks for having us.
Look, we're going to talk about nothing, okay?
Okay.
A very interesting bit of nothingness came over me at the weekend.
Oh.
Nicole Kidman has bought a sixth, I can't say that, house in Sydney. Now, look, and by the way, she actually has a seventh house because her parental home is in Bellevue Hill, just up the road from Bondi, where I live. Now, I'm just wondering, you know, I went on social media and got hammered over criticizing this. People were saying, oh, maybe she's renting it out, or maybe it's something, you know, that she can lean on. And I pointed out that they're both multimillionaires, herself and Keith. And someone else said, you're just jealous. Well, really? Am I jealous?
No.
Do you think
I'm
jealous?
Do you know what I think she does with them?
Well,
I think she uses one as a sweatshop to make chaise launches for the others, and I think the others are stored to the rafters with cigarettes.
Yeah, she smokes like a trooper.
I reckon she stores all her bungers there.
Oh, God. She's bought a penthouse in the city. That's her sixth, well, actually her seventh. Adam, do you think it's necessary to have all these properties? Is there any justification? I'm not being the, you know, the guy who's criticizing it for the sake of nothing. I just think, I know there's a massive homelessness cases in Sydney. And I know that those people could not afford these penthouses and houses. So I guess it's not really the point. But what are your thoughts, Adam?
Look, first up, I think the houses and the properties that people like they are buying really has no impact on the housing shortage in Australia at the moment.
No.
I mean, the average person is hardly going to rush out and buy, you know,
a penthouse
property on the Southern Highlands worth many millions of dollars, or an apartment in the city worth many millions of dollars. It's that, you know, that's not happening. Mm. You know,
I
don't know how many children she has
Russian
now.
Oligarchy to me.
I don't know how many children they've got now.
Four.
Four or five.
I think
or
it's
six.
Two, four. I don't know.
They have two of their own, and there's two from the Tom Cruise marriage, but I don't think they see them very often.
So, and you know, they've. What else are they going to do with their money?
Yeah, true.
Give it to charity? Can't do that.
Oh.
Well, they did. They gave $100,000 to bushfires, which I thought was a little chintzy, but
yeah, you know, come on. You see, let's criticize them. It's just that they're both multimillionaires. Look, they have a situation where they can live in a different house in Sydney every night of the week.
Yeah,
maybe that's why they did it. They just let the cleaners through.
They spent 80% of their time, I read, in the United States, where they also own a numerous amount of properties. And I just couldn't, you know, I just thought this was a bit ridiculous.
It's like those Russian, remember before the Russians were terrible. And they had all these really, really expensive, the Russian billionaires, all these really expensive townhouses in places like Chelsea in London, and they were empty 90% of the time. This feels a bit Russian oligarchy to me.
Yes. Well, you know, they are actors and they're very wealthy, and it is Sydney's Nicole's home, or Sydney's Nicole's seven homes. I just wonder, you know, people are saying, are you jealous? I mean, for goodness sake, I would hate to be either of them.
Yeah, what a drag.
What a drag. Okay.
Says she as she puffs on a cigarette.
You know, it's funny. I read an article that Nicole, you know, they said, oh, she occasionally smokes. Bollocks.
That means she smokes.
A lot. That's what it
means. She occasionally smokes like she occasionally breathes.
Yeah, yes. Something like that.
Yes, it's like being a little bit pregnant.
Hmm. That's right.
It's like being a little bit diabetic.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous. Anyway, let's move on, shall we? We're talking about nothing. Now, I find that I'm a slave to the ding on Facebook or WhatsApp. Now, this is interesting because when you see those little red lights in the top right of your, let's say, Facebook screen, One is for messages. One is for posts. I can't help it. I have to click those buttons. It's like I communicate with our correspondents around the world, often through Facebook, but mostly through WhatsApp, which also dings on my phone, even though I use it on the desktop. Do you find that you just feel that you kind of have to click that button to find out? Are you just intrigued?
No, I don't.
No?
I don't. And the reason why is I turned off the notifications and I moved those apps to the last page. I have to scroll all the way through to the last page of the apps on my phone to get them.
Oh.
So I don't see them when they're not the first things I see.
Mm.
So I have to make a conscious effort to go look.
Right. Well, I get a lot of communication both for my wine job because all my colleagues in the wine company are on Facebook because our email doesn't work very well at the moment. So I kind of have to click on them just in case. Adam, I noticed that you kind of disappear from social media at the weekends.
I do too. Mm.
Which is very healthy.
No, not by choice.
Oh.
I had stupidly set up two-step authentication to get access to your account.
Oh, yeah.
Through Facebook's code generator.
Yeah.
And then Facebook disabled their code generator.
Mm-hmm.
And I now can't get access to Facebook on anything other than my phone because I can't get the code to get access to it.
Oh, my God.
So Facebook have screwed me over nicely.
Jesus.
Yeah, and of course Facebook.
What
have
you got to say for yourself, Facebook?
They don't give a flying damn about their customers. They don't care if I can get access to my account or not. So I can't even raise the issue with them.
Well, you're not talking to humans.
Because everything I go to on my phone, and my phone is my only point of access, and everything I go to on my phone says you must do this through a PC.
Oh, you're kidding.
Which I can't access.
So this is a second verification thing?
Yeah.
People keep asking me to do this because, as you know, my main Facebook account got hacked. And I've never got around to doing it. I keep meaning to, but you know what,
Adam?
I ain't doing it.
What I fail to understand is why the hell Facebook would remove their code, disable their code generator, and not disable the settings for people to use it beforehand.
Do you know why they did this?
No idea.
I can't say it on the radio.
The thing is, you know, you're not talking to a human anyway with Facebook. You're talking to a bot. So everything's automated through computers. So I think it's almost...
they're doing. They deliberately turned off their code generator, which many of their customers were using to get access to their account. I don't understand why they would just turn that off and not turn the setting off.
Have you checked that other people are having this problem?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yep.
And they're doing nothing about it.
No. Mm. They don't care.
Yeah. Well, you know... But
once I lose access on my mobile, once my mobile phone either goes flat or I've got to log back in on my mobile, that's it. I lose all access to my Facebook account.
Jesus.
Oy.
Well, I'm not doing that.
That happens. Well, then I'm just going off Facebook because I'm not setting up another account for them.
No.
Well, I've gone off all social lately for personal reasons, but I needed to step away because there's other things going on in my life, but I also wanted to detox a little. I think I was spending a little bit too much time on social and I wanted to focus on things that were more important, like I've started painting again.
Oh, nice.
I've also found this wonderful sketching that you can do that is all about sort of getting a thought out of your brain, but you get it out in like get a Sharpie and draw these curvy lines, and then you've got to draw more curvy lines, and you end up sort of drawing all these curvy lines, and then having to shape things in between them, and then colour in with various pencils in lots of different shading, and it turns out to be really lovely art.
What are you painting?
I'm doing another, and Adam would understand because he too is a Jackson Pollock lover. I'm doing more basically, you know, Pollock-esque. I'm ripping him off, in other words.
Action painting.
I'm not doing his exact paintings, but I'm using a lot of his techniques.
Adam, do you paint?
Excellent stuff.
Do you paint?
Sorry?
Do you paint?
I do, but I haven't done a painting in a little while. It's been a couple of years since I've done a painting. But I was just on the week last this past weekend looking at buying a canvas. I've got the paints and everything here still. Oh. So I'm looking at getting a canvas, and I'm just tossing up as to whether I want to start with a smallish canvas.
Hmm.
Or what I used to do years ago when I was painting on a regular basis, I used to buy like a whole roll of calico, and I would lay that out, and very much like Jackson Pollock, I would lay that on the floor, and I would paint directly onto that. And so I'm just trying to decide whether I wanted to start off small or do something big again. I've got the space.
Make sure you get an easel, though. Make sure you get an easel.
Well, yes,
I just find it a whole lot easier, and it's just more stable, and you can stand back from it and really get a good look at it, and then go really up close. It's just the most of all the tools in my painting, and I like to also muck around with I paint in oil, and yep. I also paint in acrylic, but I like to use a spatula so that I've got lovely textures in my paintings as well. And having an easel just gives you more flexibility to step away from your art, step closer to your art, see what you need to do from far away, and you know it's always stable. It's not going to fall down. Depending on where you're painting, it's not going to blow over. And it's just most wonderful. Having an easel made me feel like a real painter, if that makes sense.
Mm.
Absolutely, it does make perfect sense. But it depends on the painting I'm doing. If it's a big canvas one that I lay on the floor, a la Jackson Pollock, the way he used to, then I, you know, obviously I don't need an easel for that. But if I start with a small one, which I most probably will, then an easel is essential. You're right.
It's very good for your mental health, I believe.
It is. It's actually a perfect example of how to practice mindfulness. Mm. When I was in the hospital years ago with the bipolar bearness, we did a lot of art therapy, and they talk about adult colouring in books and things like that, and that's really good for mindfulness because it's keeping your mind on one thing. You can't drift away because your eyes are focused on one thing. When you lose your mindfulness, or when you are having racing thoughts or anything like that, the one thing that will fix it is keeping your eye on one single thing, because when you do that, you can't have the racing thoughts. It's biologically impossible for you to do it. So it's a very useful exercise in mindfulness, and not just for people like me who've got, you know, diagnosed mental illness. It's just great for anybody who wants to practice mindfulness.
Absolutely.
And what do you actually think about a particular subject?
No.
No, Adam?
I tend to paint feelings.
Yes, me too.
Yeah, that's interesting. So they often end up with a form in it of some sort, an abstracted form of some sort in there.
Hmm.
But often it's just purely formless colour and
So do you have a picture in your mind? This is fascinating to me because I've never, I'm crazy. I've no, my attention span is like zero. Do you have?
That's why you need mindfulness.
Mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, I'll keep that in mind.
This is a song. This is a song about nothing. Still a song. It's still a song about nothing. Yeah. is this song?
Song.
About this song is nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing is a song about this song. This song. This. This was a song.
Your good friend.
A conversation about nothing.
By the way, if you've just joined us, I'm Henry in Sydney, Australia, and I'm joined by Adam, Devlin, and Rachel Brunson in Queensland and Victoria. Now, and we're talking about nothing, by the way. This is kind of related to thinking. And, you know, a friend of mine says, when you say something like, "Were you at the zoo yesterday? Did you see giraffes?" She says she never sees pictures in her mind of those giraffes. I asked her to see a picture of a church in her mind. She could not do it. Now, I'm going to ask you two to keep your eyes open, and I want you to see, in your mind's eye, a racing car going down a track.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Now, my girlfriend, Caroline, as you both know very well, can't do that. Isn't that bizarre? It's called aphantasia. Only 2% of people have this condition. And it's not a bad condition. It doesn't affect anything, except she can't. Because I tested her, and I said, imagine the car spinning down the road. She said, no. I said, can you imagine the picture of a pink rose or a red rose? She said, no. Isn't that weird?
She might have been, when you did the car thing, she might have been bored. Because cars are stupid.
No, she's not. Because I did the flower thing. She likes flowers.
Oh, that's weird.
Those are her eyes. Can she see them?
Nope. You know what? Actually, what's interesting is when she goes to sleep and dreams, she can see movement and colour.
Mm-hmm.
But it's when she's awake. And this is called aphantasia. And many people don't even know that they've got aphantasia. They assume, you know, others when talking, when, you know, they assume others were speaking metaphorically when they described seeing something in their mind's eye. They didn't, like, people with aphantasia didn't even know for years. But it's a thing.
Wow.
I find it bizarre. I'd hate to be like that. But Caroline doesn't mind. Like, she's okay with it.
Well, she doesn't know what she's missing, so, you
well,
know.
Yeah, I guess so. But she was rather shocked. I don't know how she found out. Okay. Now, let's continue, shall we? Where am I? I've lost all my notes here.
Never mind.
Oh, God. Do we need notes? We're talking about nothing after all.
No, you don't need notes. Just start nothing.
Oh, look, you know what? So, when I was researching this show...
Oh, dear. Here we go. I think this must be the 15th installment of so.
Yeah. Well, I've got to think about it.
I just do.
I should just get over it.
I'm
talking about the word so. When a young person is answering a question, it drives me nuts. They always start with so, blah, 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 blah. And this is not just young people. Older people, not old people, but older people do it. I see these reporters, you know, TV reporters being asked questions from the guy on the desk, the anchor, and they start with so. This irritates me. Does it irritate any of you?
No.
Adam?
I mean, it's just become the norm. I don't really even hear it anymore.
Yeah.
What bothers me, grinds my gears, is people using the word like every 5 seconds in a sentence.
Oh, they do it in the middle of the sentence as well.
Yes.
That's so, just as bad as...
It's like...
The thing that drives me to drink is the overuse of the word literally.
Oh, that's another one.
The word literally.
I literally died. Did you?
Yeah.
Did you really?
No, we should not.
Yes, that grinds my gears too.
Is that another young thing or is that a general thing?
No, I think that's a bit general, yeah. I think.
But, you know,
But it tends to be, I've found, and this may be my xenophobia on display, but it appears to me it's a much more American thing.
I agree.
The like thing or the...
Literally.
And then this, and then he was like that, yeah. And then was like, rather than use the word said.
They can use like three times in one sentence. It's like,
yes.
It's like, oh, I just did that. It's like.
Well, I don't like it.
I don't like it like. Adam, do you like?
Literally, no.
And here's another one.
So he hates it.
What about My Bad? I mean, really?
Look, I hate that. That's American as.
It is American, but Australian, young Australians are watching a lot of American TV. Actually, a friend of mine, Andrew Stewart, who you guys would know, I think.
I know. Yeah.
Yes, I know, Andrew.
He was commenting a couple of years ago, and he made a mistake with something that he was saying. He goes, "My bad." And I said, "Andrew, what age are you?"
What television are you watching?
Indeed. Well, it's used extensively, as you say, the like thing and my bad and so. The thing is, I studied higher English and I could be seen as a snob, but I'm very protective of the English language. But maybe I'm just old-fashioned, you know?
No, you just like the fact that, you know, that an ignoramus wouldn't do that. And I think that's fine. That's not elitist in any way. That's simply using grammar correctly, and we should all do it.
Yeah. But someone, you know, criticised me for this, and they said, look, actually it was Caroline. She bullies me, that girl.
Oh, I love it. If a woman starts with the word look, you know you're in trouble.
Yeah, well, especially if it's your girlfriend. Or your boyfriend, Adam.
True.
I just find that, you know, she says, look, get over it. Language changes all the time.
And she's right.
And she said, like,
and it has to. It has to, otherwise it dies.
It has to evolve.
Yeah.
And, you know, she said in 10 years' time, they may be out of, you know, out of the scene, and more different kind of uses of the English language will come into play.
When are they leaving? Because I'd like to see that.
What's that?
When are they leaving? Goodbye.
Yeah, indeed. I want to talk about, you know, we're talking about nothing if you just joined us. And another interesting nothing piece is Australia's drive-in culture. Now, back in the 50s, of course, was the big time for drive-in theatres, outdoor cinema, I should say. And it's fading to black, as some report says in Australian newspapers, as outdoor cinema numbers drop from 330 to just 15 venues. I've never been to a drive-in.
Beth goes every week.
Where does she go?
There's one in Dandenong, and there's one in Coburg, right next to the old Pentridge Prison. It's really spooky.
Ooh. I've been to the Coburg one a couple of times when I was living in Reservoir.
Do you... Is it like the 50s? Like, do you have to tune in your radio? I've never done this.
No, not anymore. You might.
Yeah, you do. You tune in. They give you an FM frequency to tune into.
Yeah.
And you can, like, order your food from an app and they bring it to you.
Oh,
you don't
really?
You don't have to go to the concession stand anymore if you don't wish to.
And it doesn't break into your viewing.
Right.
No. Is a movie better at a drive-in? Is the atmosphere better?
Depends who you're with.
Oh, okay.
And if you want to see the movie, or if you're there to watch the movie, you'll make a baby.
You don't go to the cinema. If you're a cinemaphile, you don't use the drive-in.
Why is that?
Because you're looking at it on a large outdoor screen through your windscreen of the car, and so the picture quality is just not the same as what you would get in a cinema.
Not to mention the audio quality.
The audio should be okay now. I was a kid.
They're not really there to watch the movie, let's be truthful.
They're there to snog.
Yeah, they're snogging.
I just love that.
They can't see the movie. The windows are all foggy.
I just love... And the car's rocking, right?
Yeah, don't bother knocking.
I just like, you know, those 50s movies crack me up. You know, the 15 venues from 330, it's... You know, a bit of a worry. I must go to one of those venues. I don't know if there's any in Sydney, probably out in Western.
Do before it ends.
Hmm?
Do before they vanish altogether. You should do it at least once.
I should.
When I was growing up, we didn't have a cinema in our town, and the nearest place to go and see a movie was in the next town up the coast, and they had a drive-in.
Was that Bega?
No, Pambula, actually.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay.
But yeah, I would have been, I reckon, easily in my mid-teens before I sat in a cinema for the first time.
Wow.
Drive-ins were fun when we were kids.
Did you annoy your parents or whatever?
No. The very first, they used to have a double feature. And we'd gone there to see the original Superman movie with Christopher Reeve. And they had this movie that I had to suffer through, a Bruce Lee movie called Enter the Dragon. Can you imagine at 8 years old how interested I was in that?
No.
But Superman was cool at the drive-in.
That was like 1980, I think.
That was a special outing for us as a family. We'd go to the drive-in.
And when you went
to... We didn't go to the drive-in very often when I was a child, but, again, for special occasions or special events or special films, you know, I was taken to the cinema to see ABBA the movie. I was taken to the cinema to see Grease. I was taken to the cinema to see Xanadu. So, you know, and there are a number of other films that were family events that we would all get in the car and go to, but they were horrible because Mum and Dad would be in the front seats and then us three or four kids, depending on who came, would be all in the back seat. And, of course, if you're not right in the middle of the back seat, then you've got to sort of peer around the back of the front chair. So, you know, it was just so you got bored trying to do that. So then you just annoy the person sitting in the middle of the back seat. So that
we had a station wagon, so we reversed up.
Oh, that's a good idea.
And the back of the station wagon, and we had like a bit of a mattress and some pillows and a couple of blankies, and we'd all sit up against the back of the back seat. And then as we got sleepy during Enter the Dragon, as you do, you'd lie down, and then Mum had to wake me up for Superman.
It was just me and
Mum and Dad and Phil, so there was only four of us, and it was quite roomy.
But how did they watch the movie if you had backed the car up?
Well, we all sat in the back. We put the seats down in the back of the station wagon, and so we had all this room.
You know,
so
the
we
back
had
of the station wagon. So.
The back of the station wagon that we put the back sort of window up, and then the what used to be a like a, you know, you pull down the bottom half of the like that.
Hmm. Wow, that
became like a ledge to sit on or put your feet on.
Wow, it sounds so lovely.
It was, and you should go with Caroline and see something diabolical.
I'll have to find out if there's one in Sydney. It would be out
there must be
in
somewhere.
Western suburbs somewhere. I have been to an outdoor cinema, but that was not involving cars. Sorry, Adam?
Not quite the same.
No, not at all.
No.
Yeah, well, anyway, 15 venues left. My time starts now in order to get to one of those cinemas. You were talking about nothing here, by the way, dear folks. With Rachel in Melbourne and Adam in Brisbane. I'm Henry in Sydney. I cook quite a lot, you might be surprised to hear.
You put it on Facebook all the time.
Oh, I do put pictures and pisses people off. I don't care.
Why?
You're always putting pictures on Facebook about food. Anyway.
Well, scroll on by, loser.
Yeah, exactly. Look, I don't cook many different things. You know, I'll cook spaghetti bolognese, which is my kind of spaghetti bolognese. It's different than yours would be, Rachel.
Oh, yes. Robbie'd go,
husband.
It's not real bolognese, by the way.
No, I know this. Macaroni cheese. I love macaroni cheese. I can make that. But thing is, when I do take over the kitchen, Caroline's not allowed in. I am a kitchen Nazi. I control the kitchen. I can't help myself. I just don't want any invasion by anyone in my kitchen.
I'm exactly the same.
You like that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, the long-suffering boyfriend knows that when I'm in the kitchen cooking, not to come near me.
Yeah, Caroline knows that too. What about you?
If I want help, I'll ask for it.
Yeah, like.
No, I don't do a lot of the cooking these days, but when I do, we live in an apartment and it's a bit squeezy anyway. So if you're in the kitchen, when I'm in the kitchen, it's just sort of like being in the way. I don't care that you're there, just in the way, and you're going to get hit.
Well, that's
probably
my problem.
A saucepan, a flying saucepan or something. It's just better for safety if people aren't in my kitchen.
You might hit them over the head with the flying saucepan.
Yeah, I might.
Yeah. But it is funny because it's like this control freakery that I've got, you know. And I don't know why I have this, because Caroline's a lovely person. But our kitchen is very small, as you both have seen, actually, here in Bondi. So I am a bit of a kitchen Nazi when I'm cooking. But when she's cooking, she doesn't mind me going to the kitchen, so it must be my problem.
You shouldn't go in there just to, you know, show the same respect.
You're right. You're right, Rachel.
I often am.
What kind of stuff do you cook, you guys?
Oh, well, Robbie cooks lots of Italian food.
No,
I tend
really?
To cook. Yep, I tend to cook. I do a lovely roast chicken. I have a technique that I use with a lemon, and I would chop the lemon into quarters, and a couple of those quarters with some stuffing goes up the chicken, and I call that dish up your butt chicken.
Nice.
And so people still want to eat it. I cook a lot of some casserole-y stuff. Like Beth White loves tuna bake for some reason, so I cook that a lot. And I do a lot of salad type dishes as well. So I'll do a Nichois salad, or I'll do a Caesar salad, or I'll do a variation on a theme with salads, because we're big on salad in our house.
Mm. Adam, since you stopped eating meat, your cooking has changed. Is it more exciting or less exciting?
It's more interesting because I get to try things that if I was still a meat eater, I wouldn't necessarily try. Mm. I've gone through stages where I've made my own seitan, I've made my own fake meat, and I like to see a meat dish and then devise a meat-free version of it. And so I like to play in the kitchen, and I'm very big on finger food. So I love doing like parties and such where I can have like five or six different hot, interesting finger foods that are all vegetarian, but people wouldn't necessarily know they were vegetarian.
Right, you made me a burger once, and I had no idea it was vegetarian. Yeah. And thrice cooked chips.
Yes.
Hmm.
Yum yum yum.
Yum so, yum. Yum yum.
Adam, we've talked about this before. You have made food for. You've had a barbecue, and I think your family was there, and they really didn't notice the difference.
I'm not a militant vegetarian. So if you're coming to my house and we're having a barbecue and you bring some meat for the barbecue, I'll cook it for you.
Hmm.
And I'll cook it well and serve it up to you. But I just don't cook or eat it for ourselves.
Yeah. Does it affect you if, let's say, the fat or the, you know, the oils have been used for meat and you use the same oils?
Look, I would prefer them not to have been, but I'm not militant about it. Like on the barbecue, I'll have one side of the barbecue, the side that the oil doesn't drain into, because barbecue plates aren't dead flat. They're built to drain the oil off them. So I make sure that I put my vegetarian stuff at the highest point of the hot plate so that fat doesn't roll onto them. So the fat from my stuff rolls onto the meat. But if it, you know, I look at it this way. When we go and eat out and we order vegetarian meals, very rarely would they have a separate cooking station just for the vegetarian stuff.
Mm.
So we're realists. We don't eat meat consciously. But I'm sure over the years we've had stuff that was cooked in oil that had meat cooked in it or, what do you do?
Yeah, you've got to take your chances, especially if you're out, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Rachel, have you ever considered being a vegetarian with a husband whose parents are from Italy?
I became a pescatarian for a while. I went off red meat. I went off chicken, but I would eat fish. I liked to eat fish. And if you give me my druthers, I'd eat fish every day. I tried vegetarian vegetarianism as a teenager, but as a teenager that was mildly futile because I still had a deep relationship with McDonald's. They didn't have veggie options back then. But no, I haven't been a committed today. Vegetarian once. I did try vegan for a little while, but I found it a little too too much to think about, too much prep, too much trying to source things. It was just, I found it a very difficult thing, and I wouldn't be a vegan for sure.
Mm. Adam?
The only thing stopping me from being a vegan is cheese.
Cheese is great.
I can't. Jesus. And I've tried all of the vegan cheeses, and they're getting better over the years. They're very good now, but they're still just not
what
good
do,
enough.
What do they actually taste like? Do they not have the strength of the taste of
cheese? No, they taste of cheese.
What are they made of?
The taste is fine. It's the texture and its meltability that I still have an issue with. The texture still isn't quite right. It's still got that taste, the texture of a processed cheese as opposed to a natural block of cheese.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't have that crumbly texture that I like a cheese to have. And as I said, the taste is fine. The mouthfeel is still a little comes across as processed as opposed to natural cheese. Mm. But they're getting a hell of a lot better, I have to say. And I would imagine within sort of a couple of years, I may even be tempted again to try veganism.
Well, yeah, it's interesting. You know, our colleague in Spain, Carol Cotter, is a vegan. Is there any particular reason you want to move to veganism? Is it a political thing? Is it a health thing?
It's a moral thing.
It's a moral thing. Okay.
Yeah, you know, I don't like the idea of animals being farmed. No. And, you know, here in Australia, dairy farming is not quite as advanced as it is in some other countries, but we don't do battery dairy farming, where we tend not to in this country, so it's not so bad here. But you see some dairy farms that are fully automated and like battery farming for cows, and it's just cruel.
Yes. And what about chickens? I mean,
well,
that's still going on.
Absolutely abhorrent.
How is it still going on?
I eat eggs, and I won't buy eggs that, first of all, I will only buy free-range eggs, and I will only buy eggs...
Well, they're delicious.
I will only buy eggs from farms that have a maximum of 1,500 hens per hectare.
How can you work that one out?
Listed on the packets.
On the box. Okay.
Yeah.
By
law, they can have up to 10,000 hens per hectare and still be called free-range. Mm. But... there are a couple of brands that go no more than 1,500, because that's what, you know, animal scientists say, that's what the animal needs to have optimum health.
Hmm.
10,000 is too crowded still. So I'll only buy eggs, and they cost, you know, a few cents more per dozen.
Yeah, it's not a lot more. We get them as well.
I don't care about that.
Yeah.
I'm not buying meat, so I'm saving a pocket full of money there.
You're damn right, yeah.
No vegetable is the same price as meat per kilo, so so it's you know, I can afford that little bit extra to buy the free range small farm lot eggs.
You know, Caroline, my girlfriend, she says that she's beginning not to trust what's on the box, and she's read some reports where they're bending the rules in what they're saying on these boxes of eggs, which is a bit of a worry to me. Have they found a loophole or what? I don't know the details of this. She's just read it somewhere. What do you think of that?
Look, I think the whole farming industry, and particularly the slaughtering of animals in the farming industry, it's incredibly difficult to find out truth in any of that.
Yeah,
it's all very secretive and cloak and dagger, and you know, anybody who wants to farm that way has clearly got something to hide.
Mm.
So you know, I don't think they'd have any problem lying on the box.
No,
yeah.
You know, there's one egg producer, and the name of the brand escapes me right at this moment. Not that it matters, but you know, they actually have a website and a QR code on their carton of eggs that you can log on. Mm-hmm. And it will show you live footage of you know, the chickens in their
farm. A webcam, cool.
Yes.
That's cool. I like that.
So you can log on and see their 1,500 hens per hectare running around and
having,
you
know, fun.
Having fun, living their best life. Yeah.
Fantastic.
So, you know, that sort of stuff helps. Mm. But even that, you know, we never know what goes on behind closed doors in the production of food.
Indeed.
And I would have to say, you know, I did food science when I was at university, and I visited a lot of food factories. And, admittedly, that was in the mid-'80s, 1980s, and not my mid-'80s. And and most of those factories that I went into, I haven't eaten food out of them since.
Yeah, it's interesting, because that was, as you say, a long time ago. I presume things
have changed. For example,
you
know, I used to work for a large margarine company, and
I remember that.
Yeah, and
better not name them.
The offices I was based in was attached to the factory where the margarine was made, and so I had the opportunity to go in and see how margarine was made. And to my knowledge, I've not eaten margarine since then.
You know what? Margarine's so bad for you. Back in the 1970s, all the ads on TV, polyunsaturated margarine was the go. And butter was supposed to give you heart attacks and stuff like that. And it's all changed. You know, we used to eat margarine back in the 90s. But, you know,
do yourself. Here's a little test for you both.
Mm-hmm.
Have a look the next time you're in a supermarket in the butter aisle and where the margarine is. Mm-hmm. And try to find a packet of margarine that actually says margarine on the label.
Oh, sneaky one.
Dirty word that can't be mentioned anymore.
Oh.
They're all spreads.
Yes.
Oh, God. The word that dares not speak its name or something like that?
Because the word spread could be just about anything. And basically, I think spread is actually French for fake.
Yeah.
I'm going to check that out, Adam. I'm going to call you on this.
No, please do it. Even your generic margarines, like your generic version of, you know, Medley or Flora, they're just spread. Like you will not see the word margarine on a pot in a supermarket these days.
Wow. And I also believe that margarine is black when you make it, and they color it.
It is. Well, they have to turn the oil rancid before they process it. That makes it go black.
You had me at rancid.
So then they have to bleach it to get rid of the black. So that makes it clear. Then they have to colour it yellow to make it look like butter. And then they've got to put artificial solidifiers in it to make it solid like butter.
I wonder, have they lost a lot of sales in margarine? Are people aware of this?
Not since they took the word margarine off the packaging.
Listen, before we go, I just want to mention something that amuses my girlfriend no end. You know, when I cook a chicken, when I was single, I'd actually cook a chicken. Can you believe it? When I wasn't in nightclubs getting shit-faced with Adam. I would cook a chicken and I would put mustard on my chicken.
Hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, when I met Caroline, we started living together. She said, "What are you doing?" I said, "We just made a roast chicken." I said, "Putting mustard on it." And she got addicted to this. And so do I. I love mustard. So then I started putting, I was always putting mustard on sausages. And she said, "You put mustard on sausages?" I said, "Yeah." Now I make homemade chips. She's addicted to mustard. And we have mustard on everything. Chips, sausages, eggs even.
Yep.
I love this. You know, it just adds.
Love mustard.
What do you
love
think?
Love it to death.
Yeah, I mean, we have a thing called
everything.
We have a thing called MO, mustard overload, or something like that. It's when you take a bit too much mustard in your mouth and you go, "Whoa!"
Hot mustard. So you're talking about hot English?
Yes, indeed.
Right.
About nothing four else. Or five different styles of mustard in my fridge at any time.
Yeah. Well, hot English is the only one for me. I need to blow my head off. It's a thing.
Yep.
Rach, do you like mustard?
I love mustard. I don't like hot English mustard. It's too much for me. I don't like hot things.
Oh,
although, having said that, I am a massive wasabi fan. I think horseradishy things for me are better, but I like German mustard. I like French mustard. I like Dijon mustard.
Dijon's nice, yeah.
I like all the mustards except for hot English. And I think my dad, I think it's his fault I don't like it. He used to put it on like, you know when people will do stupid things that aren't Australian and they slather Vegemite all over things when they shouldn't?
Mm-hmm.
My dad slathered hot English mustard on everything, and it just made me, as a child, just wish that I was anywhere else.
You can now get a mild English mustard, which has the same flavour as the hot English, but without the heat.
Oh, for goodness sake.
I would like that.
For goodness sake, be a man. Be a woman. Be a man.
I can't tolerate hot food, and also since when I went to hospital last year, when the bacteria was eating me from the inside out, now I've got a terrible case of diverticulitis. So in my intestine there are pockets now.
Oh dear.
From scars.
Yeah.
And so I can't eat things like rice. I can't eat things like seeds. I can't eat. Yeah, because they get stuck in the pockets, and then I get a raging infection and have to go back to hospital.
Oh, God. Can you eat
spicy? And I can't eat hot food.
I was going to say, can you eat spicy food?
Nope.
Wow. I love
spicy. But I don't like it anyway, so I'm good.
Oh, okay. Adam, spicy food for you?
The spicier, the better.
Mm. Okay. Next time you're having a chicken, Rachel, throw a bit of mustard on there. It's addictive. Ask my
but girlfriend. Only the mild one, and don't you judge me.
I'm in trouble now. Okay, you can have the mild one. Adam, next time you've got your sausages that are not made out of meat, throw a bit of mustard on it.
I already do that.
Oh, you do? I'm glad to hear someone else does this.
Yes.
Well, fantastic.
Wonderful. I cut the piece of sausage off and I dip it in the hot English mustard and then in some tomato sauce and in my gob.
Beautiful. I have
And Worcestershire sauce as well. So I have three sauces for my sausages.
Ah. And you guys talked about, I've got a blank now. We've got a thing called Bovril in the UK.
Yes.
And you've got, what's it called?
Jeez, Vegemite.
Thank you, Vegemite. do you guys like Vegemite?
I love it.
Put it in. If I'm doing a wet dish of some sort, like a casserole or soup or anything like that, any sort of wet dish I cook always has Vegemite in it.
I should visit.
And I love it on toast, just Vegemite, butter, and toast.
I should revisit this because in 1990, I'd only been here half a year, and someone gave me Vegemite. Now, I never liked Bovril or Marmite, the English version, but I had this and I just hated it. It just seemed so sour or something.
You should try Cheesy Mite.
Oh, Cheesy
Mite. You'd enjoy Cheesy Mite.
Sounds good. Is that for kids?
Not really, but it's a very mild version of Vegemite, but it's also got a little cheesy bite to it, hence its name.
I'm going to write this down.
You need to try it. You would like it.
Cheesy Mite.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I've written that
down.
And
you can't put too much on.
Well, don't worry. I'm going to go slowly with this.
You'll like it.
If you're feeling poorly or you've got a cold and it's cold and you're cold and you want to be warmed up, a teaspoon of Vegemite in a mug of hot water is delicious.
Is it good for your health?
Must be. It's Australian Vegemite.
It's full of B vitamins, so it's good for energy.
Okay.
It's very, very warming. It's like a hug from your granny.
It is. I don't like it like that, so I have a Milo.
I wouldn't like a hug from my granny. She's been dead since 1972.
Oh, yeah, that's pongy.
Okay, that's the end of this cooking show. We've been talking about nothing for the last 45 minutes. Thank you so much, Rachel Brunson in Melbourne and Adam Devlin in Brisbane in Queensland. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
This is Bondi Tunes International. This is Real Munchy Radio.
We've got you covered.
Caught in a landslide, no escape from reality. Open your eyes, look up to the skies and see.
I'm just a poor boy. I need no sympathy.
Because I'm easy come, easy go. Little high, little low.
Any way the wind
blows doesn't really matter to me.
To me. Mama just killed a man.
If you're going to do a version of this classic for fun, the group to do it had better match it in quality. The original by Queen as a mini-opera can be considered as slightly over the top, so the cover version should have the same quality. Only one group comes to mind to do it justice. Kermit, Miss Piggy, and all the gang, the Muppets.
Is this the real life? Is this just fantasy? Caught in a landslide, no escape from reality. Open your eyes, look up to the skies and see. I'm just a poor boy, I need no sympathy. 'Cause I'm easy come, easy go, little high, little low, any
Dada? Dada!
I see a little silhouette of a clown. Scaramouche, Scaramouche, will you do the fandango?
Galileo, 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 Figaro.
I'm just a poor boy, nobody loves me.
He's just a poor boy from a poor family, spared in his life from his
mind strategy. No, no, no.
Easy come, easy go, will you let me go?
Nom, nom,
let me throw.
Nom, nom, they will not let you throw.
Let me blow.
Nom, nom, they will not let you blow.
Let me jump.
Do not like your jokes.
Let me jump.
Do not like your jokes.
Let me jump.
No, 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 no! Bernigini, Bernigini!
Mamma mia, let me go!
Tell me,
one,
go, if you're in the fight for me, for me, for me!
So they tell us this video's going too far!
Yeah, Chief?
Remind me to stop setting up these video conferences. They're not very productive.
You got it.
Sheesh.
Yeah!
Bondi Tunes International, a conversation about nothing.
I give her all my love, that's all I do. And if you saw my love, you'd love her too. I love her. She gives me everything and tenderly. The kiss my lover brings, she brings to me, and I love her. A love like ours could never die, as long as I have you near me. Bright are the stars that shine, dark is the sky. I know this love of mine die, and I love her.
The sun never sets on Bondi Tunes.